The Last of the Mohicans by James Fenimore Cooper. The incidents we shall attempt to relate occurred during the third year of the war which England and France waged for the possession of North America, that neither was destined to retain. The imbecility of her military leaders abroad, and the fatal want of energy in her councils at home, had lowered the character of Great Britain from the proud elevation on which it had been placed by the talents and enterprise of her former warriors and statesmen. Recently, a chosen army from that country, an army led by a chief who had been selected from a crowd of trained warriors for his rare military endowments, was disgracefully routed by a handful of French and Indians. Even the most confident and the stoutest hearts began to think the issue of the contest was becoming doubtful. When, therefore, intelligence was received at the fort, which covered the southern termination of the portage between the Hudson and the lakes, that Montcalm had been seen moving up the Champlain with an army numerous as the leaves on the trees, its truth was admitted with more of the craven reluctance of fear than with the stern joy that a warrior should feel in finding an enemy within reach of his blow. The news had been brought by an Indian runner, who also bore an urgent request from Munro, the commander of a work on the shore of the Holy Lake, for a speedy and powerful reinforcement. The distance between these two posts was less than 5 leagues. The loyal servants of the British Crown had given to one of these forest fastnesses the name of William Henry, and to the other that of Fort Edward. The veteran Scotchman just named held the first, with a regiment of regulars and a few provincials, a force really far too small to make head against the formidable power that Montcalm was leading to the foot of his earthen mounds. At the latter, however, lay General Webb, who commanded the armies of the king in the northern provinces with a body of more than 5,000 men. By uniting the several detachments of his command, this officer might have arrayed nearly double that number of combatants against the enterprising Frenchmen, who had ventured so far from his reinforcements with an army but little superior in numbers. One damp morning at Fort Edward, before a log cabin of unusual size, in front of which those sentinels paced their rounds who were known to guard the English general, there were signs of a departure. At this spot were gathered some half dozen horses, caparisoned in a manner which showed that two, at least, were designed to bear the persons of females of a rank that it was not usual to meet so far in the wilds of the country. A third wore the trappings and arms of an officer of the staff. At a respectful distance were gathered divers groups of curious idlers. There was one man who, by his countenance and actions, formed a marked exception to those who composed the spectators, being neither idle nor seemingly very ignorant. The person of this individual was to the last degree ungainly. His stature surpassed that of his fellows. His head was large, his shoulders narrow, his arms long and dangling, while his hands were small, if not delicate. The ill-assorted attire of the individual only served to render his awkwardness more conspicuous. A sky-blue coat, with short and broad skirts and low cape, exposed a long, thin neck, and longer and thinner legs. A large cocked hat, like those worn by clergymen, surmounted the whole. While the common herd stood aloof, the figure we have described stalked into the centre of the domestics, freely expressing his censures or commendations on the merits of the horses, as by chance they displeased or satisfied his judgment. The Indian runner, who had borne to the camp the unwelcome tidings of the preceding evening, was standing in a state of perfect repose, apparently disregarding with characteristic stoicism the excitement and bustle. The native bore both the tomahawk and knife of his tribe. The colours of the war paint had blended in dark confusion about his fierce countenance. His eye glistened like a fiery star amid lowering clouds. Exiting from the cabin, a young man in the dress of an officer conducted to their steeds 2 females, who, as it was apparent by their dresses, were prepared to encounter the fatigues of a journey in the woods. One, and she the more juvenile, fair golden hair and bright blue eyes, permitted glimpses of her dazzling complexion, fair golden hair and bright blue eyes, as she suffered the morning air to blow aside her veil.